Welcome to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending August 20th, and this is podcast number 98. I'm Joe Elia. Clinical Conversations will be gone next week. We're catching up on some surf casting for the elusive striped bass. This week, fitting for the summer garden season here in Boston, we're talking about the benefits of green leafy vegetables and their ability to lower the risks for type 2 diabetes. After that, I'll take a look at recent clinical news. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. This week, the question of dietary habits and their ability to lower the risk for type 2 diabetes was addressed in a meta-analysis published by BMJ. Starting with over 3,000 studies, the analysts focused on those with three defined characteristics. They had to be prospective cohort studies, the measures of dietary intake, specifically of fruits or vegetables or both, had to be at the individual, not group level. And thirdly, the study had to assess the development of type 2 diabetes. That left them with six studies to analyze. Let me introduce the study's first author, Patrice Carter, a research nutritionist from the Department of Cardiovascular Sciences at the University of Leicester. Welcome, Ms. Carter.
Thank you.
That was a lot of papers to screen to get down to six. Why did you undertake a meta-analysis? Because there have been others on this topic, right?
There have been one done before, but we thought there was new evidence that we could add to the meta-analysis and therefore build on the numbers involved and hopefully, you know, get a more true finding.
So what was different about your approach?
We searched a larger number of databases. We didn't restrict by language, and just newer data was available. So articles that had been released after the previous meta-analysis had been carried out, really.
Okay. That was the previous meta-analysis was in 2007, right? Yeah, and the ones and the studies that you focused on all were published between 2000 and 2008.
From 2000 up to 2008.
You found that if I can put words into your mouth, you found that if you looked at fruits individually or vegetables as a class, mm-hmm. or fruits and vegetables, there was no lessening of type 2 diabetes risk?
Well, there was a trend towards benefit of increased consumption. However, the actual pooled analysis wasn't statistically significant, so we couldn't conclude that was a significant benefit, but they all showed a benefit towards increased consumption, just not quite so obviously as the green leafy vegetables individually.
You said the magic word, the green leafy vegetables. So that was the surprise, wasn't it, in your meta-analysis?
Yeah. Basically, we found that they reduced risk by 14%, which is, you know, quite a large amount. So we were really encouraged by this, and it gives us room to investigate further as to why green leafy vegetables might be beneficial.
And you talk about the fact that people have to interpret these findings with some caution.
Firstly, you know, we only looked at six studies in total. That's only not a huge amount of studies. The green leafy vegetables, there was only four that looked at them individually, although they did all show, each individual study showed benefit. So that's why possibly the vegetables and the fruit and vegetables gave slightly less significant results, because the more studies, there was more difference between the studies. So that might have introduced a masking effect because they looked at things in different ways.
Well, you found that the effect could be gained from an average of an additional 1.15 servings per day.
Yep.
Is that over the average or over the average intake or over the lowest quarter of intake?
That was just comparing the lowest to the highest.
Okay.
So the lowest intake was about less than half a portion, and the highest was about 1.5 portions.
I see. So So even somebody who doesn't eat much of this stuff, according to these numbers, if they started modestly, you know, had themselves a little more than a serving of broccoli or something per day.
Possible, yeah. We, I mean, we found that for the effect to be seen in this, there needed to be an increased consumption of about 1.5 portions, which was about 120 grams. But obviously, I think any increase in vegetable intake is good. So if you're not having any at all, to just try and increase as much as you can is definitely the way forward.
You talk about the need for better criteria for undertaking nutrition studies. And you say, for instance, you meet people need better definitions of food, and they also perhaps ought to start using biomarkers of consumption instead of dietary recall.
Yes. For example, vitamin C has been shown to be a good biomarker for fruit and veg intake. It correlates with short-term and long-term intake. So, you know, that's just a simple blood sample, you know, one tube of blood. And generally in these screening tests, people are going to be screened anyway, so they'll be there taking bloods for example, their diabetes diagnosis. So to take an extra blood sample to measure the vitamin C isn't too difficult. So that's one option for fruit and veg.
You say something that I wish that you would talk a little bit about here. Okay. There's a sentence in your discussion that says, our results support the evidence that foods, rather than isolated components such as antioxidants, are beneficial for health. On the one hand, you say that we need these more precise measures, for instance, vitamin C. But on the other hand, you're pointing to a something in the statement where you say that foods, rather than the isolated components such as antioxidants, are beneficial.
So vitamin C as a biomarker is measuring fruit and vegetable intake as a non-biased marker, so it doesn't require self-report, etc. Mm-hmm. However, vitamin C is not what you'd particularly be interested in, if you see what I mean. You're using it as a marker for fruit and vegetable intake.
I see.
And the supplement studies are, have shown sort of conflicting evidence to observational studies. So reported fruit and veg intake has been shown to confer benefit, but then when trials have been run with actual supplements, for example, vitamin C or beta-carotene, the results haven't been so good. And that's because, you know, when you're eating your fruit and veg, you're digesting it differently to how you would pop in a pill. And you've got all the other benefits. So you've got the fiber, you've got the possibly the magnesium, possibly the fatty acid content of the actual fruit and veg, not just a pill. So it's not just the antioxidants.
I see. So, in other words, instead of loading up on those antioxidant pills of whatever sort, you're saying get the full spectrum of benefit from eating these things.
Exactly, because we don't know exactly why, you know, the fruit and veg is beneficial. It's got a number of potential benefits, and so therefore, you know, to eat the actual food is better than to just think perhaps it's the antioxidants, if you see what I mean.
I do, and it's, so it sounds like it could be the antioxidants, but there are people like you out there doing research, and so eventually we're going to find out.
Hopefully, that's right. Yeah, keep trying.
Would you encourage clinicians? This would be my final question. Would you encourage clinicians, on the basis of your findings in this meta-analysis, to make any changes in dietary advice?
No, I would say that the advice to eat five a day, if not more, is what clinicians should recommend as much as possible. And the fact that you can pinpoint green leafy vegetables, particularly for diabetes, it's worth mentioning that if you can increase them in your diet, then it should have benefits.
Yeah.
But to consume any fruit and vegetables in your diet is probably better than none.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. I've got a bowl of fruit that I will attack after the interview. And some green leafy vegetables, of course. All right, Ms. Carter, thanks so much for your time with us today. Now for a quick look at the week's most important medical news stories. First, you can't deny the importance of this one. 5 days after emergency contraceptive pill that's just been approved by the FDA. The pill, sold as Ella, has been available in Europe for a year. It's available in the U.S. only by prescription. Next, the FDA has proposed that the orthostatic hypotension drug midodrine, marketed as proamitine, be taken off the market. It's concerned that the post-approval studies it mandated for the drug at approval in 1996 haven't been carried out yet. The drug is sold in generic forms as well, and the FDA advises patients to keep taking the drug for now, but to consult with their clinicians about other treatment options. Finally, in this week's top three, recurrent headaches in teenagers may mark an unhealthy lifestyle. A study in Norway of some 6,000 teens found that smoking conferred a 50% increased risk for recurrent headaches. Being overweight conferred a 40% increased risk, and being inactive conferred a 20% risk. Sounds like smoking cessation may be more useful in these cases than starting off with a pill of some sort. The study was published in Neurology. Well, that's it for this week. I'll be back week after next. My email address is jelia@jwatch.org. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. The Journal Watch website is jwatch.org, a great resource in an ever-changing clinical landscape. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. Thank you for listening.